the State Departments keep their historical renown. It's wiser not to sleep there in case they tumble down. But still, if they ever catch on fire, which with any luck they might, we'll fight for the stately homes of England.
Stately Homes of Wiltshire. Chapter 6. Under interrogation, Herodotus Smethwick readily admitted to tampering with the wand-binding spell. As he told it, he had been playing a rather hilarious joke on a nasty piece of work. It was hardly enough to repay Malfoy Manor for what it had done to Ollivander, to the country, to himself. He was made to pay a fine and do 12 hours of community service, and within an hour of their leaving St. Mungo's, all of this was relayed to Harry via a fire call from a very bored-looking ginger assistant. "You could go to what's-his-face, Grigorovich's successor," Harry said in his bedroom in Grimald Place. He was lying in bed, because Draco had forced him to. With a charmed cooling flannel on his forehead, that creature had foisted upon his face the second he was horizontal. Every half hour he was to have a sip of foul potion, and he wasn't to tax his brain, whatever that meant. Draco looked appalled. "Holes nicked! I think the house would chuck me out entirely. British wand makers only. I would have thought that was obvious." "Well, there are other British wand makers," Harry said. "There's that bloke in Manchester, isn't there?" "No," Draco sighed. "Tacky or not, I have to do the honourable thing." "Oh, I have to..." Draco took a deep breath. "I have to apologise." "How do you think that'll go?" "Oh, probably terribly." Draco looked at him with an odd sort of look on his face. Like the rest of the world was not something he particularly cared about at that moment. He has other apprentices when he declines. "Hmm," Harry said, rolling to his side so he could watch Draco properly. He had torn his gaze from Harry and gone back to pacing back and forth in front of the fireplace. He had done this almost non-stop since they'd got in, only stopping to advise Creature on dinner, or to peer irritably out of the windows as if the small square would produce an aura carrying his restored wand. "I could talk to him if you want." "Absolutely not," Draco said, as Harry suspected he would. "Honestly, Potter. Just wanted to offer." "Take your potion," Draco said, glancing at his watch. "It's been half an hour." "Really?" Harry sighed, braced his taste buds, and grimaced as he swallowed. "What time is it?" Before Draco could answer, a high voice rang up through the house. "Harry, where are you?" "Oh," said Harry, hand to his forehead. The flannel slipped from his face. "Pub night." Draco went rigid. "Thursday." "Ah." "Harry!" Hermione's voice was closer now, and footsteps echoed from the stairs. "Harry! Ron said you'd been let out of hospital, so we thought we'd..." "Oh, hello, Draco." Hermione stood in the doorway to his bedroom, with Ron right behind her. "Hello," Draco said. He was facing Ron and Hermione with his hands held behind his back. Harry could see that his knuckles were white. "They said you'd gone with someone, but I thought it'd be Morag," Ron said, blinking rapidly. Harry snorted, which hurt his head a bit. "Really? Morag give up the opportunity to do a good old-fashioned interrogation?" "Good point." "Oh, Harry," Hermione said, starting forward. "What happened?" "Got a little hexed," Harry said. "Nothing serious. It's honestly nothing. Please don't fuss." Hermione rolled her eyes and turned to Draco. "What really happened?" "Concussion and the tail end of a hex," Draco said, a little stiffly. "The healers sent him off with a stabilising potion for his head, but you know those take time." "Nothing," Hermione repeated in disgust. "Harry!" "He tried to tell me he didn't need St. Mungo's." "He would." Hermione shook her head and hair flew everywhere. "Did you make him go then?" "Had to side along him myself." "Well, thank goodness for that." Hermione moved the flannel back to Harry's forehead with an irritated flourish. "Is this weird for you?" Ron asked, leaning in the doorway. "'Cause it's pretty weird for me, mate." "It's pretty weird," Harry agreed. Hermione and Draco were now animatedly discussing aftercare procedures and the latest in stabilising potions. Ron warily crossed the threshold into the room. "Malfoy," he said. "Weasley," said Draco, turning away from Hermione with a face like he had been plunged into a bath of moralising eels. "Thanks for getting this arsehole to hospital." Draco nodded stiffly. He glanced back at Harry as if he were looking for his next line. "You're welcome," Harry prompted. "You're welcome," Draco said. "Now you can apologise for being a wanker at school and then we can all have dinner." Draco shot Harry a slightly panicked look and then faced Ron again. "Sorry for being a wanker at school, to both of you," he said, looking at Hermione. "Really." "Thank you for the apology, Draco," Hermione said, looking almost touched.
"That's all right," Ron said, scuffing his foot on the carpet.
"I should tell Creature about the change of numbers," Draco mumbled, and fled from the room as decorously as he could manage, which apparently was not very. He almost ran. "I think he was so busy being an arsehole that I never noticed he was incredibly weird," Ron said thoughtfully.
"Yeah," Harry said, grinning. "He really is."
Hermione raised an eyebrow. "Full speed ahead?"
"You could call it that."
Harry leaned back against the pillows and began to fill Hermione and Ron in about the wand and Herodotus Smethwick.
"Well, if you had just mentioned a family wand, I would have figured it out straight away," Hermione huffed. "Rather a salient detail, don't you think?"
Draco returned after 15 minutes with Creature in tow, carrying a silver tray that was clearly meant for Harry. They transfigured the nightstand so that it was big enough to hold a massive tureen of onion soup and a plate of crusty bread. Ron had even brought beer. "None for you, Harry," Hermione informed him, and the effect was rather like a bedside pub. A bedside pub that was extremely awkwardly silent. Harry chewed his bread, feeling like his teeth were producing a deafening sound in the silence.
"I would have figured it out sooner, Draco, if I'd known about the wand," Hermione said after half a pint. "I really would have."
"Oh," Draco said.
"So are you going to have the wand redone? You need a man of wand to run the estate, correct?"
Draco nodded.
"I would absolutely love the chance to see one of the ceremonies. They're terribly ancient and almost never happen anymore, at least not here."
Hermione made appealing eyes in Draco's direction.
"Would you mind terribly if I sort of observed?"
"I wouldn't mind at all," Draco said. Silence fell again. Wet, cold, terrible silence. Perhaps it had something to do with Harry's enchanted flannel, which did not feel enchanted any longer.
"So," Ron said, "Malfoy, Harry says you go to a muggle pub."
"Sometimes," Draco said. He stared at his bowl and then said, like he was forcing himself, "There's a pub in the village that we've gone to a few times."
"We go to muggle pubs," Ron explained, "on account of the whole conquering hero shite, you know."
"Oh?"
"Yeah."
Ron ate a spoonful of soup. "You ever notice how weird their games are?" Harry loved Ron. He really did. He loved him so much that he would never tell him, except when they were drunk, because Ron would prefer that. Draco tilted his head and looked, for the first time, directly at Ron.
"I have, actually. You'd think they'd be deadly dull, what with them nothing moving, but they're all right, aren't they?"
Ron took an enthusiastic bite of bread. "Bloody hilarious!
I like the ones that you pull the stick and they fall over."
"I've tried the one where you swing the ball at the cylinders," Draco said. "I find it so odd. The cylinders only fall down. They don't even slightly explode.
There's one with little people and you have to spin them around and around at a ball," Ron told him in a confidential voice. "It is bloody brilliant."
Hermione leaned towards Harry.
"Jenga and table football. But what's Draco talking about?"
"Table skittles," Harry told her. Creature bustled into the room and went straight for Harry's forehead.
"Creature has brought a fresh cloth, Master Harry," he informed him, whisking the old one away.
"Thanks, Creature," Harry said, awkwardly submitting himself to the ministrations.
"Good,"
Creature said, finally, surveying Harry.
"Now Creature will clear the table."
"Oh, I can help with that," Hermione said anxiously, stacking bowls.
"No, no,"
Creature said, gently pushing her hands out of the way.
"Creature has it! Creature has it!"
Bowing vaguely to the four of them, Creature retreated from the room. "He really has come a long way," Ron said. "Remember when he used to smell of manure?"
"I only wish he could have stayed at Hogwarts," Hermione mused. "That way he could at least have been with the other house elves."
"Are you mad?"
Draco's eyebrow shot up towards his hairline. "Sorry, I mean no. Creature has always worked here, in this house.
He'd hate being banished from it. He'd think of that as a punishment. This is his house, as much as it's Harry's. Sorry, Harry. Harry lifted his hands in surrender. No apology needed. I know Creature runs this place.
Oh, Hermione said, looking at Draco with a sort of soft look. Oh, I suppose that's true.
She'll be prescribing you therapy next, Ron said, motioning at Draco with his glass. Watch out.
Draco, Hermione said, would you mind having a word with Creature about holiday time? Only, I don't think he takes it well from me, and Harry won't say anything else about it since he refused to make trick or tart for a month the last time.
Draco shifted in his seat. I can try, he said, like a question. Hermione beamed. Draco, under the full effect of Hermione's smile, looked very young and rather pleased. When Hermione and Ron finally left, stumbling slightly down the stairs to roars of laughter, Draco shrunk the circular table back to its usual size and surveyed the room. Well, I suppose you must have some form of guest room.
I think we should be dating, Harry said before he could finish. I think we should be dating, and I think you should stay here tonight. With me.
Draco's sharp intake of breath seemed to loosen something in his face, something holding all the points together.
Do you? He said faintly.
I do, Harry said. He was not sure if he was getting any better at emotional honesty or clear communication, like Hermione often talked to him about, but he was going to give it a damn good try. I also think you should take your shirt off. Emotional honesty really was very important.
Draco rolled his eyes, but he pulled his jumper over his head and began to unbutton his shirt.
Listen, Potter, you didn't get the chance to see before, but I have scars. Don't let's have an emotional guilt-ridden scene about it, all right?
Scars, Harry repeated, frowning.
If you have an emotional guilt-ridden scene about it, I will keep my shirt on all night.
Draco stopped unbuttoning and looked him right in the face.
Don't test me.
Harry couldn't stop staring.
I can't promise anything.
Fine, Draco said, and resumed unbuttoning.
Silvery scars were slashed across his pale chest, slightly raised above the grain of his skin. He held his arms out as if to display them.
Let's get this bloody over with. I don't entirely blame you. We were idiot children, etc., etc. Are we done?
Wow, Harry said. I can really feel the effect of all that therapy you're not having.
Draco stepped out of his trousers and climbed into bed before Harry could really get a proper look.
I think that's just about covered everything. And it saved time.
Harry reached out to run a hand over Draco's chest. The dark bathroom, water glinting from the floor, blood spilling over tiles. There had been so much blood, dark and red and wet, and Harry had thought,
I said not to have an emotional guilt-ridden scene, you tosser, Draco said gently.
He removed Harry's hand from his chest.
I don't know how not to, Harry admitted. Well, let's give this a try, Draco said, and slid down between Harry's legs. He eased his pyjama bottoms down and over his ankles, then flung them off to one side.
How's this for terrible ideas?
Harry had a retort, but all the blood in his body was rushing violently south.
Draco was running his hands up and down Harry's thighs, growing closer and closer to his cock with every pass.
Go on, he said hoarsely.
If you insist, Draco said, and swallowed him down.
Harry had expected Draco to be a slow and surly waker, but he had been wrong. Although at first Draco had moaned and clung to the duvet, at a certain point he seemed to make a sudden choice, and then he became almost irritatingly awake. Harry was still groggily acclimating to the morning, but Draco was already rushing downstairs to make coffee and start on breakfast.
We have to go back to the manor, Draco said, sliding his hands over the kitchen table. We have to tell Coote and make sure the house isn't... that nothing's gone wrong.
Harry would much rather press Draco up against the cupboard and see what happened next, but he agreed anyway. After perfunctory pieces of toast, they bid farewell to Creature and apparated into the country lane just outside the boundary of the estate.
Well, Harry apparated there. Draco was nowhere to be found.
Draco, Harry called, walking up ahead, looking out for a white blonde flash in the green landscape.
Draco was standing just outside the gate, looking irritably back at Harry. "I can't get through the bloody gate," he snapped. The gigantic iron face of the gate seemed smug. "State your purpose," it clanged. Harry should not have enjoyed doing the little serpentine wand thing that dissolved the gates, but he did a bit. Draco lapped him on the way up to the entrance, looking deeply offended when the doors remained entirely shut. "The doors don't... they don't respond to me now," Draco frowned. "They should swing open. Many people knock." Draco rolled his eyes in Harry's direction, which served to make him look less peaky. He rapped his knuckles against the enormous door as a funny expression twisted his mouth into unhappy shapes. Harry looped his arm around Draco's lower back. "Still your house," he said. "Wands aren't everything, you know." "You're gearing up to a lot of jokes about dildos, aren't you?" Draco said dryly. The door swung open, and Harry halted any dildo-related humour immediately.
"Master Draco! Oh, and Master Harry! Coot is very happy to be seeing you."
Coot waved them in hastily, nearly yanking the coats from their back as they entered the hallway. Harry stopped short just inside the door. Rows and rows of drooping pale faces drowsed in the low light. Each painting appeared almost hazy, as if covered by a thin film of fog. Every single portrait in the front hallway was asleep and in their original frames. Harry couldn't recall a time he had not seen one or two interlopers crowding into someone else's frame for a better look at the action. "This was what it was like after the Dark Lord broke the Lord of the Manor wand," Draco said with almost detached interest. "The first one, that is. Good that the portraits weren't witness to any more destruction to the house, I suppose."
"Yes, yes, the portraits," Coot said.
She looked distracted, stowing coats under one arm and looking around the hallway like she was expecting visitors. She didn't even force Harry to remove his shoes for cleaning. "Coot?" Draco looked down at her, eyebrows furrowing. "Is everything all right? Nothing's closing up, is it? I shouldn't... After last time, we tried to..."
"No, no," Coot said. "No, it is Mistress Narcissa."
"Did she fire call?"
"No," Coot said, looking shell-shocked. "Mistress Narcissa is taking her tea in the Violet Parlour, sir. She is here."
"Here?" Draco looked around like Coot had, as if Narcissa could materialise through walls. "Mother is here?"
"She would like Coot to send Master Draco up at once."
Coot glanced at Harry.
"And it would be against proper etiquette to dismiss Master Harry, of course."
"Master Harry," Draco echoed. He glanced at Harry, and his face collapsed into a nervous kind of snort. "Oh, Merlin preserve us. This ought to be a treat." "It's nice that your mum's come to see you," Harry attempted. Draco was looking slightly manic. "Nice. Yes. Narcissa Black Malfoy. Very nice." Draco looked down at his clothes and winced. "I'd better change. You too. Come along." Draco avoided the great staircase and the main passages. He led Harry up two narrow staircases tucked away in forgotten corners, winding their way up into the house at breakneck speed until the staircase spat them out in front of the doorway to Draco's room. Draco reached for the doorknob and stormed inside, leaving Harry trailing in his wake. "Dress robes," Draco muttered. "Oh, no, country attire. Casual, but not too casual." Harry realised that Draco's room was actually Draco's rooms, a series of chambers nested into each other. The first room was a small sitting area with books scattered on all surfaces. Towering stacks of parchment butted up against ancient leather-bound tomes. And Harry noticed more than a couple of well-worn paperbacks with lurid covers and titles like My Centaur, My Love. "Potter!" Harry followed the sound through an arched oak door into a cluttered bedroom. Draco turned round, arms akimbo. "Potter, you cannot wear those trousers to..." "What?" Although the carved oak four-poster bed looked like it could have once held Elizabeth I, the grey and white duvet was decidedly high street. A small desk was pushed underneath one window. The wood had been disfigured entirely by circular cup marks. Bits of the sumptuous bed hangings had been chopped away as if by a small child creating a patchwork quilt, and one of the bronze wardrobe handles had been replaced by a bright blue elastic band. The lamp on the nightstand was partially obscured by a large green T-shirt that read, "Slytherins do it in the dungeons." Draco, holding a tweed blazer in his hands, slowly began to blush. Harry took the blazer gently from his hands, put it on the bed, and kissed him. Slowly at first, and then faster, until Draco was moving into it properly. "My mother," Draco mumbled into Harry's mouth. "Ugh," Harry said, pulling away. "Your dirty talk needs serious rehab, mate." "Do not call me mate," Draco said. "I am not your mate. We're shagging. We're dating." Draco's ears went pink again. "Well, yes." "Your mother," Harry reminded him. "Shit. Right, we have to dress. Quickly, come on." Draco shoved a pair of trousers and a jacket at Harry, then went rummaging in his wardrobe again. "Your bed is really tall," Harry said, ditching his jumper and shimmying into the new one. "When I was a child, I had invisible steps to get in," Draco said, emerging from his wardrobe with a tweed waistcoat. Harry buttoned up his borrowed trousers. The chill of Malfoy Manor lessened dramatically in Draco's clothes, and he examined the lining of the tweed jacket. "What's this fabric made of?" "Warming charms are weaved into the cloth," Draco explained, buttoning up his waistcoat. "It's the traditional method, only way people can survive in these drafty old places. I have no idea how muggles do it." "Central heating?" Draco shot him a perplexed and slightly irritated look, which was not far from his customary expression around Harry. He yanked on some oddly long and soft leather boots that turned down below the knee, then chucked a similar pair at Harry's head. "Handy we're about the same size," Harry said, pulling the strange boots over his calves. "I'm taller." "Yes, you have 2 inches and 3 months on me, Draco. Truly your wisdom is superior." Harry squinted at the boots. "Am I doing this right?" "No," Draco said, and knelt down to help. He kept reaching for his wand and scowling, then adjusting the leather by hand as if it had personally insulted him. Eventually he stood, wiping his hands on his trousers. "Acceptable." Harry looked in the long, ornate mirror. Someone he did not recognise stared back at him. "You look a bit like your grandfather," Draco said, looking over his shoulder. "Less drunk, of course." "He was drunk." Harry pushed his hair back. He still looked a bit ridiculous, and let it flop back over his forehead. "You couldn't tell." Draco wrapped his arms around Harry's torso to adjust his waistcoat. "Sozzled, I'm afraid. Perhaps the lack of alcohol tolerance is also genetic." "Arsehole," Harry said, elbowing Draco's side. "By the way, where's your wand?" Draco frowned. "Is your head all right? You finished your potion. This should be..." "Not that one," Harry said. "The hawthorn wand. You can at least use that, can't you? Until you get your new one." "It's in the desk somewhere," Draco said, and began rummaging through the top drawers. "It doesn't really respond like it used to, but I suppose..." "Ah, here we are." The wand that finally defeated Voldemort was wrapped in a Slytherin scarf and buried in the top drawer of Draco's overfull desk. Harry remembered all the requests to put the thing on display somewhere, and was doubly relieved he gave it back instead. Draco tucked the wand into a thin pocket inside his jacket that had to be specially made. Harry transferred his wand to an identical pocket within his own jacket, and Draco examined himself in the mirror, making a face. "Acceptable," he said finally. "All right, let's go see Mother." "You say that like you're going off to war." "Got it in one," Draco said, and led Harry out of his rooms and into the rest of the house. The carved wyverns that Harry had repaired not a fortnight ago had gone entirely still. He looked around the ornate staircase and saw that nothing was moving, not a wyvern, nor a snake, nor a leopard. Harry ran a hand over a phoenix beak, trying to feel the magic that had moved in the wood. "It's so strange. It's not just that they're not moving. It's sort of like everything's in a fog." "We're lucky the house isn't actively trying to chuck us out," Draco said, rounding the corner. "The last time it did. Really pleased the Dark Lord, I can't tell you." They came to a stop in front of a pair of oak doors, and Draco's spine immediately went rigid. He took a deep breath and pushed the doors open. A tall, blonde woman sat in the violet parlour, gazing calmly out the window. She held a teacup of such fine porcelain that the sun shone through the sides. "Good afternoon, Draco," she said, and turned towards the door. Harry could spot the moment that Narcissa Malfoy caught sight of him, because her posture became even more rigid. "Aura Potter," she said, voice as crisp and cold as frost-covered grass. Narcissa had very similar tells to her son. "What a surprise, Mother," Draco said, his shoulders so tight you could crack an egg on them. "I didn't know to expect you. I'm terribly sorry. Your rooms are still closed for the season."
"I've already instructed Coot to open my rooms. Thank you, Draco."
Harry did not know a lot about parents, but he did think Narcissa and Draco were speaking to one another more like business partners who didn't particularly get on, but also didn't want to trod on any toes.
"Please sit down," Narcissa said, and motioned at a pair of chintzy lilac armchairs.
Draco was unable to entirely suppress the face he made at that, but he covered by sweeping his hair back on the way to the chairs. Harry sat to his right, hoping that these armchairs were not as prone to collapse as the ones in the library. A cloud of dust rose from the cushions. Everyone genteelly ignored it, except Harry, who sneezed.
"I have been made aware of some troubling rumours, Draco." Narcissa hovered a cup of tea towards her son and then another towards Harry.
Harry plucked it from the air and tried not to immediately crush the delicate porcelain. What on earth was the point of a teacup this fragile? He imagined Narcissa holding the enormous Quidditch mug Ginny had got him last Christmas and suppressed a laugh. Draco was definitely not thinking about mugs. Draco was entirely focused on his mother.
"Have you?" he said. It was not a question.
"Yes."
Narcissa took a delicate sip of tea. "Poltergeists, Draco? Trouble with the wand enchantment? You know, I told you that was a very delicate ceremony and that you ought to have a more experienced overseer. Someone who has been running their estate for a few decades at least. That bungling could have cost us quite a bit, darling. Coot tells me the portraits have been acting up. Any experienced lord of the manor would know that was an indicator of mismanaged foundation enchantments."
"An overseer," Draco drawled. "Which did you have in mind, Mother?"
"Gladolius Brown. His estate is hopelessly mismanaged and everyone knows it. Benedict Parkinson. He is entirely dotty. Or were you thinking we'd pop one of the others out of Azkaban and have a little jaunt to Wiltshire?"
"Really," Narcissa sighed, "there's no need to become dramatic."
"That's like asking a Kelpie to give breathing a go," Harry said.
Draco's mouth twitched. But Narcissa just watched Harry as though he were a deer who had wandered in from the park by mistake. A rude deer, with terrible manners, by whom one would be understandably a bit disgusted. She still looked, just then, as if she was smelling something terrible. Perhaps the deer.
"Additionally," she said, as if Harry had not spoken at all, "I find it strange that I have to hear about all of this from Alcyon McDougall, of all people. You couldn't send an owl."
Draco shrugged one shoulder.
"Well, she is your cousin."
"Once removed, Draco," Narcissa said, nose tightening.
"And your third cousin."
"Also once removed," Narcissa said. "From where has this sudden interest in genealogy sprung?"
Draco darted a glance at Harry so briefly that he thought he had imagined it. Narcissa must have seen something that Harry didn't, because she rounded on her son.
"Darling, shall we have a private chat? It's hardly appropriate to discuss this in front of company."
"Harry is not company, Mother." Draco glanced at Harry for longer this time. His grey eyes were wide and slightly panicked, although the rest of his mouth was a smooth mask.
"We're seeing each other."
"Dating," Harry added helpfully.
"Dating," Narcissa repeated. The word was forced from her mouth like an unexpectedly sour lemon. Perhaps this was how she tried to say therapy.
"It's going quite well, thanks," Harry said.
"Dating," Narcissa said again.
She leaned back in her chair.
"Well, I can't say I am entirely surprised."
"You're not."
Draco frowned.
"Why not? Why are you not entirely surprised? This ought to be very surprising information."
"Darling, there were several summers during which you would hardly go a paragraph without mentioning Harry Potter. Let us not pretend otherwise. It's simply unbecoming of us all."
"Ah," Draco said.
"Ah," Harry said, grinning. They drank their tea. Harry could not figure out how Narcissa and Draco did it. They managed to be utterly silent with every swallow. Harry felt every gulp reverberate out of his throat.
"I don't quite like this china pattern, darling," Narcissa said, after what must have been at least 7 years of awkward sipping. "I'll instruct Coot to switch to the bluebell pattern for spring."
"OK," said Draco tightly.
"Don't say OK, darling. All right would be sufficient."
"All right," said Draco, even more tightly. Narcissa smiled blithely and turned to Harry.
"I must say, Mr. Potter, I hardly expected to see you in traditional wizarding attire."
"I'm training him," Draco said.
"Is that all, Mother? We have several errands to finish today." "I do hope you organise the wand ceremony as soon as possible." Narcissa tilted her head to watch her son. "I would be happy to owl an appropriate person to advise you."
"I won't put you through the agony of terrible options," Draco huffed. "We'll be going now, Mother." He sounded about 15, although Draco actually at 15 had been horrible. Harry couldn't help but find it endearing. It was as if all of Fugglestone, St. Peter, Malfoy Manor and the acres of Malfoy land had been contained within a filmy bubble that the outside world could not pop. Draco did not feel like Draco Malfoy, and Harry did not feel like Harry Potter. Now, with his mother occupying her customary rooms, it felt as if the world had come forcibly to the door. When Draco told Harry that they had to pay a visit to Diagon Alley, he was honestly not sure which of them was the more reluctant. Luckily, they were both doing an all right job pretending to be brave about it. Harry might actually have been brave. Draco was just attempting not to run away.
"I've got to go to Ollivander's, and I don't want you coming with me," Draco told Harry in a low voice as they left the apparition point. The crowd gave them a wide berth, as if for a dangerous pair of hippogriffs.
"I've got to go check in at work anyway," Harry said glumly. "I'm off today, but they'll expect me to testify about Fishelburn."
"Then why did you apparate here instead of to the bloody ministry?"
Harry shrugged. He slouched along, face grey, eyebrows pulled down over his eyes. Just that morning, he'd been singing some horrific muggle pop song to his coffee.
"Well, get going, you asshole."
Draco gently touched Harry's elbow. He wanted very much to kiss him, but they were very much in public.
"Come to mine after. I can almost guarantee you won't see my mother."
"Romance," sighed Harry, and went behind a cart filled with green jars of Grindylow eggs to disapparate. Draco looked up at the sign above the narrow shop. "Ollivanders, makers of fine wands since 382 BC. It was comforting that some things were older than his damn family. As he stepped inside, a thin man with sharp, pale eyes looked him up and down with a pursed mouth.
"Father, we have a customer."
"Gindon?" Garrick Ollivander emerged slowly from the back room, leaning heavily on a gnarled cane. His face was gaunt and deeply lined, although he had regained colour since Draco had last seen him. Not being confined to a cellar would be helpful for one's complexion, Draco would imagine.
"Ah, Mr. Malfoy. Thank you, Gindon."
Gindon Ollivander scowled at Draco but left the main room, leaving Draco to his probably excruciating fate.
"Hawthorn and unicorn hair, 10 inches. Ollivander observed him with a still, unreadable face. "Reasonably springy," he added after an interval.
"That's right," Draco said, "although I'm sure you're aware of the Malfoy custom."
"The Lord of the Manor One, yes,"
Ollivander hummed to himself, staring at a point above Draco's left ear. "Many of the old families are dear to that tradition. I came to ask if you would perform the ceremony."
"Did you?" Ollivander said. "How interesting."
Draco swallowed hard and tried to imitate one of his more composed ancestors. "I also wished to extend my formal apology to you on behalf of the family and myself for our actions during the war. I know Malfoy Manor cannot hold positive memories for you, and if you don't wish to revisit the scene, I of course understand, and would ask only that you recommend another wandmaker."
"Hmm,"
hummed Ollivander, wandering away towards a towering stack of boxes. Draco was not sure if he was meant to follow.
He stared after him. How interesting that you should choose today. How interesting indeed. Draco said. May I inquire why? I know who sent the house elf to the dungeons with the blankets, Mr. Malfoy. The food, the chamber pot, a small music box on one occasion, as I recall. Draco could not look at Ollivander. He stared at his shoes. I will do this ceremony, Ollivander said finally, although not for you, Draco Malfoy. A lord of the manor wand is a delicate instrument and requires extremely supple enchantment. No apprentice, no matter how many years they are into their training, could ever have been expected to perform it to the necessary standard. Draco got the impression that Ollivander thought Herodotus Smethwick had just made an elementary mistake rather than actively fucking it up, but wasn't about to correct him. Thank you.
Oh, hello, Draco, Luna Lovegood said. She stood in the doorway from the back room, wearing a strangely proportioned dress of diaphanous floral print. Did I hear you were having a ceremony?
Draco boggled at her. Luna tended to look unlikely anywhere she set foot, as if she had wandered there almost by mistake, but that did not make her appearance any less surprising. At the new moon, Ollivander said, turning his attention to a large book of parchment, we shall begin at dawn and end at dusk.
How lovely, Luna said. She turned to Draco. May I attend?
Draco said, glancing at Ollivander. Yes, if you would like to.
I would like to, Luna said placidly. I just said so.
Right. Draco wondered how best to extricate himself from this shop without being confronted by more of his past. Surely there wasn't an ornery goblin in the back room as well.
You can just leave, Luna told him. I wouldn't worry about bowing or anything.
Draco could feel himself growing more horrifically posh with every breath. Yeah, absolutely, he said, sounding as vowely as that pillock Cormac McLagan. Of course, he could feel himself start to think, McLagan's family is rather nouveau. Oh, no. This would not do at all. Draco was not that person anymore, not even in his head. Is he all right? Ollivander asked, not sounding particularly interested.
I think so, Luna said. Draco, if it's rack spurts, try to think positive thoughts.
Ha! Ha! Draco said faintly. He had to leave before he regressed any further. Perhaps it was the shop. Did it make them into a version of themselves at 11? Luna at 11 apparently was very composed and had odd taste in footwear. I'm off then. Bye-bye. Draco left to the sound of the tinkling bell and winced. Bye-bye, he asked the air, and hurried to find somewhere to disapparate. Draco was not proud of himself for hiding in his rooms ever since he got back from Diagon Alley, but really, he couldn't face his mother coming around an unexpected corner and asking him if he still hadn't repaired the ceiling in the blue bedroom. Since he had no idea where Narcissa would be at any given point, he felt the safest option was utter retreat. It's your house, Draco reminded himself, face pressed to a sofa cushion. It's your bloody house now. The sofa cushion remained quite silent on the matter. It probably still pledged fealty to his mother. Merlin, not even his old wand felt like his anymore. Draco's stomach gave a violent plea for sustenance and, after checking the desk drawers for secret stashes of sweets, he cracked open his door and peered around. No one. He took the back stairs to the ground floor, ducking under narrow ceilings that had been intended for house elves. The kitchen was a clear shot from the Ethelred passage, and Narcissa rarely entered this part of the house unless there was a party she had to oversee preparation for. Too irritated to even consider cooking charms, Draco made do with a hunk of cheese and an apple. Coot was dozing at the other end of the table, her white head pillowed on an overturned pewter bowl. Draco hated the house like this, still and painful like a dead tooth. It felt like it had during the war. Before his father's wand had been destroyed, the portraits warned him if the Dark Lord or his creepy giant snake, a wild-eyed Auntie Bellatrix, were nearby. He could hide in the remote corners of the attics and trust that the staircases would divert any pursuers. He could climb out onto the roof and watch the gargoyles preen, stare at the sky and imagine that his house was safe. After the wand was gone, it had been like losing an ally. Coot jumped up like she had been shocked.
"Someone is here," she said.
"I didn't hear anything," Draco said, looking back towards the rest of the house. Normally a bell would ring, or a portrait would let them know that the replica gate in the drawing room was demanding attention. Coote sniffed.
"Master Draco ought to clean his ears."
"Master Draco's ears are fine," Draco muttered. "You're balmy."
"Cheek,"
Coote said, pointing a long finger at him sternly. She bustled away with an aura of irritation. Draco ate the rest of his cheese out of spite. He wasn't sure how aggressive chewing counted as spite, but it did make him feel better. 5 minutes later, Coote returned with Harry in tow.
"There, Coote will be seeing to Mistress Narcissa now."
"Don't tell her we're here," Draco said. Coote shot him a knowing look.
"Perhaps if Master Draco hadn't spoken to Coote in such a fashion."
She sighed theatrically, walking slowly to the door.
"Left his manners at the doorstep, I see."
"I didn't leave my manners anywhere," Draco grumbled, although not too loud for Coote to hear. Harry looked grey and tired. He collapsed onto a long wooden bench and put his head in his hands. "Long day," he said. "You were there for about 4 hours tops," Draco pointed out.
"Was I?"
"Felt longer." Harry sighed and looked up. "We had to close Fishelburn and file all the evidence. There was..." He looked off to the side. "Never mind."
"There was what, Potter?"
Draco moved to sit astride one of the benches, getting up close so he could make Harry look at him.
"You don't want to know."
"I just asked, so clearly I do want to know." Harry stared down at his bitten fingernails. "You shouldn't have to hear about that sort of thing."
"I can assure you I've seen worse."
"I don't want to talk about it," Harry said and got up. He walked towards the fireplace, rubbing his forehead. "Where's your mum?" Draco shrugged.
"I've been avoiding her."
"I don't blame you." Harry ran a finger along the frozen mantelpiece. "She's no picnic." Draco bristled.
"She's my mother, Potter."
"She doesn't act like it," Harry muttered.
"What was that?"
Draco got to his feet, stomach twisting.
"What?"
Harry turned towards him. "She's no picnic."
"She's not. Your mother left you here with all this. After the war, she just fucked off. And now she's back, and all she does is harass you about China patterns."
"Not everyone has to show affection like your Weasleys," Draco spat. "You don't know the first thing about my family."
"You do not get to start about the Weasleys," Harry said fiercely.
"You started on me." Draco threw up his hands. "This is ridiculous. You wouldn't be acting like this if you hadn't just experienced whatever hellscape spawned from that nightmare cubicle factory you call a job."
"Spawned from?"
Harry's mouth dropped open, which was still an appealing sight, even in a high rage. "That whatever hellscape goes on whether we're there to stop it or not, Draco. I'd rather be there to stop it."
"Would you? Would you really?"
"Yes," Harry very clearly lied. Draco threw up his hands and made a silent plea to the ceiling.
"You wouldn't. You fucking wouldn't. You're lying, Harry. Don't you think I know what you look like when you're lying? You're an awful liar. Horrific. Your mouth does this twisting thing and your eyes aren't in it and the whole thing is an absolute mess. I've known every bloody time you've lied in front of me since we were 11, which is, all right, kind of fucking depressing. We're not talking about me. Shouldn't we be?"
"No, Harry. We are having a fight about how much you hate your job."
"I thought we were fighting about your family."
"That was ages ago. Keep up." Draco folded his arms across his chest. "You need to leave your job. It's killing you."
"No," Harry snapped. "They need me."
"They do not need you, Potter," Draco hissed. "Don't be so full of yourself. I'm sure you're helpful in some respects, but the Department of Magical Law Enforcement existed just fine before your first breath on this terrible fucking planet, and it will exist just fine after you shuffle off this mortal coil, etc. So get off your high hippogriff and listen to reason."
"You aren't being reasonable."
Harry strode away from him and nearly careered into a portrait of Athanasia Malfoy. "Risk is a part of the damn job, Malfoy. I don't mind it. I like it."
"Yeah, because you have some weird adrenaline thing."
Draco followed him across the room. "That isn't the only reason why you need to leave the damn auras. If you read an article called, say, 13 Reasons to Resign, it would read like a catalogue to your fucking life. Draco ticked off points on his fingers. You wake up every morning with a feeling of doom. You're bored all the time. Although in your case, you're bored three-fourths of the time and in adrenaline mode for the remainder. You feel like you never win. You just solve a case and move on to the next pile of fun, pain and exciting torture. You probably never laugh at work or even smile. You don't sleep well. You're stressed and anxious. Am I ringing a few bells here? Draco, Harry said evenly, have you read articles about quitting your job as research? No, Draco lied. Harry looked like he was about to smile, but his slightly upturned lips drew almost immediately back into a frown. You've never even had a job. What the fuck would you know about it? We'll just gloss right over running the estate, shall we? Because you've seen what I do here, Draco snapped, feeling like that was not actually a very good argument, but saying it anyway. He sold potions on occasions. When he was a child, he used to address his father's post and got paid in nuts. But moving right along, all of those things I just said, do you know how sad you look sometimes? Most of the time, whenever anyone brings up your bloody job. That's not normal, Potter. That's not right. This is what I do, Harry bellowed, turning away. It's what I've always done. You're not just a weapon. Draco would be more embarrassed about how his voice cracked on the last word if he were less furious. I don't fucking care what Dumbledore taught you. You don't get to talk about him. Harry whirled around, eyes blazing, cheeks red. You don't know Dumbledore. You don't know what he had to do. To be perfectly fucking honest, Harry, I do not care what he had to do. He left you with those muggles, those cretins. He acted for an entirety of your life like he was there to protect you. But when exactly were you protected? Sure, he cared about you. Like in the way you care about the deer you cultivate in your park to hunt. Sure, they're cute, and you make sure no one offs them. But that's because one day you're going to kill them. That is the poshest and most idiotic metaphor possibly in the world. It was a simile, Draco said stiffly. I can't be here right now, Harry muttered, and disapparated straight out of the kitchen. Draco was not sure if he was more irritated at the impropriety of Potter disapparating inside his house. Honestly, had no one ever taught the boy basic etiquette? Or at how clearly he himself had bungled that conversation. Well, shit, Draco said. No tart remark or admonishment followed. The portraits slept on. Draco? His mother paused in the doorway to the kitchen, one long hand on the stone wall. Did I hear voices? Harry just left. Draco put the kettle on. Let his mother be scandalised that he didn't call for Coote. He didn't care. His mother's nose tightened at the sight, but she said nothing. She glided in and took a graceful seat at the long kitchen table. Draco had never seen her sit there. Not ever. That table was for house elves, help and children. That sounded quite the row, darling, she said. Draco chose the pine pattern china out of sheer orneriness and added the milk without being asked. It was, he said, and hovered his mother's cup of tea towards her. You found your old wand then? His mother plucked the teacup out of the air. I was going to ask you if you'd rather borrow mine again. Draco was torn between irritation at her obviously employing maternal guilt in her arsenal of tricks and feeling actual guilt. That's all right, mother. He sat across from her. It was always strange seeing her, like drenching up an old lake. But he never knew which parts of himself would turn up. Harry Potter, his mother said slowly with a smirk playing around her mouth. She wrapped her hands around her teacup. I can't tell if this is very good for the family or very bad. What? Are you weighing out the disadvantages of our inability to breed with his status in the wizarding world? She shot him a disapproving look. Of course, those are considerations, Draco, but you do me a disservice. They are far from the first concerns that come to mind. Oh, Draco said, staring down at his tea. I am concerned first about your well-being, Draco. That sounded like quite the volatile conversation, and between you and I, this house has held quite enough conflict for the time being. The kitchen was one of the only rooms in Malfoy Manor where the stone walls were not obscured by tapestry or panelling or wallpaper. They bared the truth of the building, the heavy, unloved weight of it. Those stones could hold any amount of conflict. Those stones held the Dark Lord and were still bloody standing. It was my fault, Draco said. Well, it wasn't entirely my fault, but I could have handled it better. I assume he could have handled it better as well. It's the trauma, Draco said with a quirk of his mouth. Do not make me suggest. His mother's mouth puckered. You know, although I still think it would be beneficial. Draco flapped a hand at her dismissively. Do not wave at me like you're flagging the night bus, darling. His mother sipped her tea, making a slight face at the sight of the pattern. I'll stay the remainder of the month in my usual rooms, but of course I won't overstay my welcome. I have a portkey from London on the 1st of April, and I'll be spending the summer in Italy. Draco had spent the entire afternoon hiding in his rooms, devoutly wishing his mother would just bugger off already. But at the first sign of an exit plan, he almost wanted to beg her to stay. I'll return in September. His mother reached across the table and placed her hand gently over his. I think you have done very well with the estate so far, Draco. Draco swallowed, throat dry. Thank you. His mother withdrew her hand. Aside, of course, from the absolute broom crash of the wand situation. Draco snorted. Of course. His mother would never care about Malfoy Manor as much as he did, but in a way he thought that was probably better. He loved his mother, but there was no denying that without her living here full time, there was room for him to create something new, something Narcissa Black Malfoy would not normally stomach. Draco was not sure if the provisions of the Statute of Secrecy would consider his situation an emergency, but he decided to risk it anyway. He apparated straight into the small square of Grimald Place, hoping that the late hour, heavy rain, and his mother's disillusionment charm would be sufficient to avert any curious eyes. Hidden behind a large tree, he removed the charm and made his way across the street. The yellow windows of numbers 11 and 13 reflected on the wet pavement, and Draco watched as number 12 forced its way out of hiding. Draco climbed the stairs and stopped just in front of the door. He stared at the serpent door knocker, a vivid memory igniting of being very small and having someone lift him up to reach it. His mother, perhaps. Right, Draco told the door. Right. Fuck it. Draco lifted the serpent and let it go. A few moments later, Harry opened the door. Draco did not know what he looked like, only that his hair hung lank and wet over his forehead, and he was clutching an enormous portrait frame. Would you let me in, you inhospitable oaf? Draco attempted to toss his hair out of his eyes with no hands, and failed utterly. I put an imperturbable charm on this thing, but I'm not sure how much it took. Harry stepped back to let Draco through and shut the door behind him. I brought this for you, Draco said. Is it a present? It's yours, Draco said, and turned the portrait around. Fleamont Potter slept in his gilded frame. Harry stared down at the portrait, absently touching his lower lip. But the potioner's parlour, it's some sort of collection. Draco shrugged. Sod the collection. They watched Fleamont snoring into his open cauldron. Sorry for yelling at you, Harry said. Honestly, if you hadn't, I would have worried that you were being polyjuiced. Draco wiped his wet hair from his face. You've changed, Potter, but not that much. I'm all about consistency. Draco winced down at Fleamont and then looked back up, looked Harry right in the eye. I'm sorry I yelled too. I don't take any of it back, but, you know, I should have said it better. Harry snorted. Again, the wonders of not therapy. I could read a self-help book, Draco said. You don't know. You chuck it across the room in about 5 pages. Draco shrugged. I'm only human. Now, come on, let's find some place to put this. Draco heaved the portrait back up and walked into the house, trusting Harry to follow. They hung the portrait in the drawing room.
There was a large blank space above the sofa, across from the bookshelves that clearly hid the black family tapestry.
"There are absolutely Potters on that family tree, by the way," Draco informed him, fastening the portrait properly to the wall. "Don't kid yourself thinking you're safe."
They stood back to take in the full picture. Fleamont jolted awake with a snort, blinking his wide, dark eyes out at them.
"Hello, young friends," he said, beaming. "Having a pleasant evening? I must have had a little snooze there. I feel quite rested now."
Fleamont Potter was very like an elderly Harry, aside from his eyes. Draco hoped that when Harry was Fleamont's age, he'd have those same deep smile lines. "I guess the portrait's part of this house now," Draco said. He adjusted the frame slightly so that it was level. "I had wondered how long it would take to switch allegiances."
"Let's go upstairs," Harry said.
Draco frowned at him. "Something wrong?"
"There are some things I don't want to do in front of a portrait of my grandfather."
"Oh," said Draco.
"Oh."
Nothing felt entirely real in Harry's dim bedroom. Not the intoxicating scent of Harry's skin, nor the hungry way he chased Draco's lips whenever they parted for breath. Draco had never had anything like this before. The naked tenderness in Harry's eyes almost burned, and Draco had to shut his eyes before he did something horrific like cry or tell Harry to never leave him.
"I think we should have sex," Harry said.
"I thought that was the plan," Draco said, his eyes still shut. He fumbled his hand up Harry's chest to hold his jaw, finger the hinge of bone under his ear.
"I mean, I think we should have penetrative sex."
"Oh," Draco said and opened his eyes. Those green lanterns Harry called eyes were wide and earnest, and Draco just wanted to fully chuck himself out of the long window to his right.
"I'm not sure which position you prefer," Harry said.
Draco shrugged.
"I don't know," he admitted.
"Oh," Harry said, looking at Draco with something quite like wonder.
"I dabbled at school," Draco said defensively. "I've just been busy, and, well, there aren't a lot of options in the grand metropolis of Fuggleston St. Peter, so it's been a while."
"I think you should fuck me first," Harry said, and continued on as if he had not just shorted out Draco's brain entirely. "We can work up to you."
"Work up to?" Draco began indignantly, but Harry was kissing him.
He had straddled his hips and was kissing him deep into the mattress.
"This takes a lot of communication and teamwork," Harry said, as he slicked his fingers and drove them into himself.
"You are fucking yourself with your fingers, and you sound like a bloody Quidditch captain doing the rousing pre-match speech." Harry laughed and fell to the side, his gorgeous head flung back on the pillow. His cock was red on his belly. He added the tip of a third finger.
"Oliver Wood had a speech I think could be relevant."
"I can't believe you're talking about Oliver Wood at a time like this," Draco said. He couldn't tear his eyes away from Harry. He thought he was going to combust from the inside.
"Okay, men," Harry said, pushing Draco back on the bed. "This is the best team Gryffindor's had in years."
Draco's squawk of protest shifted dramatically into something faintly humiliating as Harry climbed over him.
"This is it, the big one."
Harry reached beneath himself and positioned Draco's cock.
"The one we've all been waiting for."
"I really wish this wasn't working for me as much as it is," Draco admitted.
"We're going to win," Harry said.
"I know it." He lowered himself slowly onto Draco, taking Draco inside of him. What the fuck? Draco's voice, when he spoke, was unapologetically strangled.
"I want a nice, fair game from all of you," he said.
Harry's forehead wrinkled, and Draco stroked his hands up and down his thighs until it went smooth.
"Okay," Harry said when he was ready.
"No promises, though." Draco surged up to take Harry's face in his hands. Terrifying feelings rose in him like a tsunami, threatening to break free at any moment. He kissed him and tried to make the kiss feel like everything he couldn't say yet. When they were both dazed and sated, lying sweaty on the sheets, Harry ran his open palm across Draco's chest, tracing the scars down to his belly.
"You're right," he said. "I need to leave the ministry."
"Oh, thank Merlin," Draco said, thunking his head back against the pillow.
"I mean, I support whatever choice you're making. It's your call, and I support that call, etc."
Harry snorted and slapped Draco's hip lightly. Yeah, well. He put his head down in the valley just below Draco's shoulder and spoke into the skin. I've known for a while. I guess I just needed a push. Or an incredible know-it-all yelling at you in his kitchen, Draco reasoned. Oh, no. I'm the new Hermione. Nah. Hermione's emotionally mature. You're a complete and utter wanker, Draco said, but he couldn't keep the laugh from his voice. But it's a fair cop. By the way, do you want to come to my weird wand ceremony? Luna Lovegood's coming too, and Hermione, of course. I think my mother's invited Greg and Pansy, so there could be thrilling tension. How could I miss out on the thrilling tension? Harry's smile could drown entire continents in terrible feelings. Draco never, ever had a chance. Ollivander arrived before dawn to begin negotiations with the wand tree. He did this differently to Herodotus Smedwick. Slower, more stately, and he did not at any point make any sort of joke. As the sun moved across the sky, Ollivander began to craft the wand, and observers began to trickle onto the grounds. A small procession followed Draco and Ollivander as they moved from the grand hall to the great staircase, to the south banqueting hall, harnessing the threads of the house into the wand. Draco's mother, Harry, Hermione, Luna, even Ron Weasley had come. Pansy and Greg arrived late, long after the last of the carving had been completed. Ollivander did not stop to eat or use the lavatory, but Coote set up a table of food in the garden and lit the hanging lights, set the heating charms. By the time Ollivander got to the laying on of the Lord's hands, they had moved onto the lawn. The sun cast a red glow over the grass and the peacocks, the trees and the audience. Draco could see Morag out of the corner of his eye now, and a red-headed girl he supposed was Matilda. His mother mouthed posture, and Draco stood up straighter, lay his hand over the wand and said the ceremonial words. He could feel the magic rush into him, like the first time Ollivander had handed him his hawthorn wand when he was 11. The sun dipped below the trees, and Draco waved the new wand in a serpentine pattern. A stream of silver sparks shot from the end, fizzing like fireworks in the dim air. There was a faint smattering of applause, Luna clapping wildly, and his mother a polite and approving patter. And then Ollivander gave a faint bow to his audience. "We are finished," he told Draco quietly. 11 inches, elm and unicorn hair." "Thank you," Draco said, looking down at his wand. "The last two wands were dragon heartstring." "Well," Ollivander said, smoothing his robes, "I suppose times change." Ollivander declined the offer of food, said farewell more to the wand than to Draco, and disapparated with a crack that startled the peacocks. "That was absolutely fascinating," Hermione said, as the cluster of people crowded around to have a look at the freshly carved wand. "I've never seen a wand being made at all, let alone such an intricate ceremony." "So much Latin," Pansy sighed. "It was like being a child again." "Did you all have to do Latin?" Harry did not touch Draco directly, but he stood close enough that Draco could feel the warmth of his skin. "I didn't understand any of it," Greg said glumly. "Mum tried with Bill, Charlie and Percy, but gave up around the time the twins were old enough to throw things," Ron Weasley told them. He eyed Greg and Pansy with some misgivings, but stood his ground admirably. "Pansy, have you met my girlfriend?" Morag motioned to Matilda, who looked rather bored. "Charmed," Pansy drawled, attempting to outboard her. "Oh, my God, it's Ginger Assistant," Harry breathed in Draco's ear. "What?" Draco shot him a look. "She has name, you know. It's Matilda." "Matilda," Harry repeated, as if the name were the key to a mystery. Draco's mother was observing this spectacle from a discreet distance. "Shall we adjourn to the garden?" she asked, clearly straining to act composed and not like she was utterly shocked at what her life had come to. They ate finger sandwiches, drank wine, and listened to the faint warbles of a violin from a thoughtfully placed wireless. Later, as people began to leave, Draco would take Harry further into the garden and kiss him, touch his face, and possibly say one or two of the horrible things he kept stopping himself from blurting out. First, though, they talked about the house.
I really think historical tours would be wonderful, Hermione insisted. I'm sure some would come for the more grisly facets, but they'd leave learning an awful lot of the other parts of wizarding history, which is more than we can say for a Hogwarts education, truth be told.
Better to have the teen fascists spend their money at the manor, Harry said to Draco with a smirk. You can keep an eye on them.
Could have some brilliant Quidditch games on some of those fields, Ron said, nodding off towards the land. They've got a lot of land here. Maybe a youth league, something like that.
You could make a killing on fashion shoots, said Matilda. Morag made a face.
May as well do a full hunting weekend, Draco. Invite my dad, he'd pay through the nose.
Mine too, said Pansy, although my apologies if you actually had to speak to him.
I think you should farm more, Greg announced. We do that.
Perhaps a lovely rock concert, Luna said thoughtfully, or a festival. Muggles have festivals and they're not nearly so good at sound amplification.
Opening the house to the public, Draco's mother said faintly. Merlin preserve us.
Coot watched them all with wide, judgmental eyes.
Coot is also not being sure about these new fashions, Mistress Narcissa.
Draco looked up at the vast stone house and thought about the pale-faced portraits that had his nose or his eyes all waking up and shaking off the dust. His father's portrait, a warped mirror of his own face, resigned to an unused room for now. His predecessors had looked out of those windows and made love in those rooms, duelled in the galleries and hexed each other within the walled garden. Malfoy Manor had been close to ruin before and would likely be again. Draco found it comforting that in a century, maybe, his story would not be so badly remembered. Yes, the Dark Lord had slept and shat and eaten inside those stone walls, but so had hundreds of others. So what do you think? Harry's arm pressed gently up against Draco's. What are you going to do?
I'm going to get you alone, Draco told him, low into the brown coil of his ear. Then we can take it from there. The end.
The baby in the guest wing who crouches by the grate was walled up in the west wing in 1428. If anyone spots the Queen of Scots in a hand-embroidered shroud, we're proud of the stately homes of England.
Thank you for listening. I'd like to thank Waspabi for giving permission for me to record this. You can leave feedback to the author of the story through the link at the AO3 page where this podfic is housed. Or you could leave kudos or feedback for me. It would be very much appreciated.